This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hey everybody, Paulie here with Hard Drive Radio in the studio now with Palais Royal. They were very nice to come up and see us on this wonderful and hectic day when traffic is insane, security is at an all-time high, and yet you guys trudged your way all the way across the city just to come see us. So first of all, thank you very much. I just want to go run around and do a quick introduction real quick. Let's start with Emerson.
Hello there. My name is Emerson. I'm the drummer of this lovely band.
I'm Remington. I'm the singer.
I'm Sebastian, and I'm the guitar player.
Excellent. It's good to have you guys here. And I want to kind of start at the beginning of where this journey all begins. Just tell me how you guys kind of started playing music together.
Well, we are three brothers, so we've been playing music together our entire lives. We were classically trained in piano when we were like 2, 4, and 6. And then we found out what rock and roll was, and we're like, oh my God, let's do that.
We went
started
and
destroying things.
We went and saw the Black Crowes live, and that was kind of the start of it all. That you get a little hint of that, and then we saw Jet, and then we're like, oh, that's cool. That's what we want to do.
And we saw Oasis like right before they disbanded. And I think, whatever you choose to grow up with, we wanted to see in the world, and we wanted to see and like those musicians. And unfortunately, in today's generation, there's not many of them. So we took it upon ourselves to be that.
Emerson, I'm just going to stop you and just kind of talk directly into the mic. You're kind of like off axis right now.
Oh,
there
sorry.
You go. All good, man. So you guys, I think I read your bio. You were born in Canada, and you grew up in Vegas.
Yeah.
All places. So tell me about, you know, growing up in Vegas and how that kind of influenced you as artists.
I was born in Toronto and the guys were born in Vegas, but we, growing up there, you've had a lot of bands like The Killers or Panic! The Disco and a lot of larger-than-life bands that the whole show and the theatrics and the way you dress was an importance to what, you know, symbolized the band for. And that was what we fell in love with musically. It was bands like The Stones that it was the whole package from the way you looked and the way you sounded. So it was, I feel Vegas really had this huge impact on us just for larger-than-life aspect of it. And the music came, obviously, first with that, but we had to...
I grew up around, you know, rock and roll, casinos and strippers, so it kind of all makes sense, you know?
And then, of course, you moved to L.A., which is, like, the most rock and roll thing to do to start.
Yeah, we moved to L.A. with the whole idea of basically, let's get to L.A. and let's get out of L.A. And we spent about 2 to 3 years there trying to figuring out what band we wanted to necessarily be. And
that's when we started playing shows at like the Sunset Strip. And then that's when we met Kim Fowley, which kind of gave us the rock and roll boot camp.
Yeah, Rodney Bingenhammer and Kim Fowley. And we played some shows with like Scott Weiland and Courtney Love and Billy Idol and did that whole Camp Freddy aspect of it. So it was funny, we were playing shows that for our age demographic at least wasn't, the music we were playing was reaching to this audience, but we were like, all right, we need to get on the road and play to audiences that are close at our ages. And we've been on the road for about 2 years straight now and 400 shows later. So,
and I think you guys played Warped Tour, right?
We did Warped Tour. Yeah. That was, it was, yeah, it is
that was
what
the
it
summer.
Is. It was
that
fun.
That was the summer.
I always enjoy going to Warped Tour and just, you know, doing the whole trial by fire questionnaire of like the new bands who are doing it. It's like, you know, how are you dealing with it? And they're like, well, it's a lot of fun, but it also really sucks.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just so insane.
Everyone looked at us and they were, the first day of Warped Tour, we show up and we're wearing velvet coats and all this. And they're like, everyone's like, they're going to die. We were literally the last band standing on the whole Warped Tour. And they're like, how are you still wearing velvet jackets and scarves and like heels? And we're like, just what we do. So,
got to suffer for your art, right?
Absolutely.
Actually, talking about, you know, the clothes that you guys wear, you know, your look is very integral to who you are as a band. So, I mean, how did you start, like, you know, developing your sense of fashion and how are you tying that into the music that you make?
Because we kind of dress, like, how individually we kind of, like, listen to and our inspirations. Like, Emerson kind of dresses like Woodstock, and that kind of makes sense.
Remy, into the mic.
Oh, you know, we all dress kind of like our inspirations, and it all ties in together with the band. Sebastian dresses more like a Beatle. And then I try to keep things more punk because I love like Sex Pistols era. And then Emerson over here is a Renaissance man. Yeah.
what's the origin of the name of the band?
Palais Royal was an old dance hall in Toronto where our grandparents met back in the 50s. And we actually just visited. We just played in Toronto at the Opera House. And when we were leaving the next day, we're like, let's stop by and see it. And the general manager came out and he's like, oh my God, this story is great. I would love to have you guys. So that's always been something we've wanted to do, is do a show at the Palais Royal. And I guess the last band to perform there was the Rolling Stones. So I'm like, that's pretty cool for us to do.
So I think we're going to try to plan a show there when Boom Boom Room Side B comes out May 5th.
Very nice. I'm going to write that down. May 5th.
It's Remington's birthday, and he wants to throw a 24-hour party.
Yeah.
I want to be a part of that party. That sounds like it's going to be a damn good time.
You're invited.
Suck it, everybody else. So, you know, you were talking about, you guys are, you know, you were on the road for 2 years. You played over 400 shows. At what point did you, you know, get a chance to record your EP that you guys put out? Did you record that on the road? Or
we the record, we the first record we did was right before we went on the road. So we did that record with James Iha. And then the moment we left, we finished that record. And about 2 months later, I think it was October 2015, we left for the road. And now we've still are on the road.
Yeah.
And everyone, I think the reason we stay on the road is entirely because we're doing it so organically. And the fan base we have built has been by playing to every single kid that shows up once or twice before.
It's weird going home now. I don't like it. It's like we spend like 2 weeks at home. I'm like, I'm so done. I'm like, just get me back on the road. I don't like it. It feels very weird to be in one place longer than like 3 days now. Because I'm like, this doesn't make sense.
Because you've been doing it so long?
Yeah. Just like 2 years.
You get used to sleeping at 60 miles per hour. There's just nothing quite like it.
Tell me how you guys got signed by Sumerian.
It came down, Eric Burden of the Animals, his daughter, was friends with the head of the label, or the label head's mother, or something weird. But he showed up to one of our shows. We were doing a high school tour, and he showed up, and he was like, all right, I want to sign you. And it was that simple. And I think that his instinct on just knowing what we're doing and allowing us to play rock and roll kind of allowed for us to do what we're doing, and he kind of just sat back and let us do it. So we were excited to do it.
A very good place. They kind of let us be artists, and they let us do kind of as we wish, and we appreciate that, because there's not many people that let artists be artists nowadays. And I think that's why music is in a state of shambles, is because there is no artistry, or there's not a lot, really. Yeah.
Well, you guys are certainly raising the bar, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, between your live performances and your optics, it's just, you know, you're really hitting in a place that people are not familiar with these days. Which,
it's honesty.
Yeah.
And that's what music has to get back to.
It's got to be a little bit of chaos.
Yeah. You have to get up on the stage. Remington will, you know, hang, you know, it's the whole Eddie Vedder thing, and hanging from 30 feet off of the Raptors backwards singing, and everyone's like, why are you doing that? You're not allowed to do that. He's like, why not? And, you know, playing radio shows that everyone's standing on a stage and Remington's walking around sitting on people's laps, and it's like, yeah, or if you guys are radio dudes, just you gotta enjoy it.
We played this radio plugger show here in New York a little bit ago, and it was like, I think it was like 17 bands that day. They're all like pretty well-known bands, and then there was us. And every band's like playing like live, and then I was like, I want to do something a little different. I was like, there's like 300 people purposely on their cell phones, so I go and lay on just like a row of people, and then I just like sit in the middle of the ground, and people are just so shocked. They're like, I've never seen anything like this. I'm like, did you look up from your BlackBerry for 2 seconds? Like, I did my job.
That's what you got to do, man, and it's good that you're willing to do that. I mean, I remember I saw you guys in the studio, Webster Hall, which is that little basement room. And sure enough, Remington's climbing on the ceiling, hanging upside down. And it's like, I love this.
Yeah.
Do this more.
I think it's lost. And, you know, you need something that's going to excite you. And, you know, honestly, if we always say when Remington's about to die, we gain more fans. So,
yeah, we started gaining a fan base when people were like, this dude's about to die like any show now. So we should probably, like, we have to take notice.
Maybe take out a life insurance policy.
Right?
all right, so the album is Boom Boom Room Side A. Tell me a little bit about when you wrote and recorded this album.
the whole process of the writing was from day one of this band starting, us figuring it out. But we were living in, or we were squatting in a 1927 speakeasy house up in Beechwood Canyon up in Hollywood. And yeah, paid 1 month's rent. Don't know how the hell we stayed for 11 months, but we
squatters' rights.
But it was beautiful, this house. It was very whimsical, and it just had that whole essence of what Hollywood was in the 20s. So we wrote the whole record, and everyone thought we were insane for writing a 30-song record. And Samarian, the one thing they did say was, you're not allowed to have a 30-song record for your debut album. We're like, well, why not? They're like, split it into two parts. I'm like, okay, that's easy. And then after writing it, that we got evicted, and we were homeless, and then Samarian literally, they had 2 days left in a motel.
We were living in a motel, and we're like, we have to get jobs or something in like 2 days because we don't have any money. And luckily enough, like, we played at high school and we got signed with like 2 days left at the motel, and it was perfect timing.
But I really feel that whole energy of it. We're never going to experience that again, and I think that's why the first collection of Boom Boom Room is so important to this band. And that's why I feel like debut albums really are, is because that's who you are before everything else. And that's before you have fans, before anyone knows who you are, before anyone even gives a shit. And you just have to kind of figure out life for yourself. And that's what we did. And I feel the music resonates it, but we've grown so much on the road now. So we're excited to kind of make the process of the second album a little bit different, because now we've experienced a lot more. And you can only, when we were sitting at home, you're writing about things you dream of. And now that we're actually experiencing all this stuff, it's, you know, now we have to, now it's real life we're talking about.
Yeah, the timing on that is so serendipitous. It's like the perfect rock and roll story. You know, you're 2 days away from, you know, being homeless on the streets, and all of a sudden you land that deal.
Oh, we were so stubborn that it was that moment of like, I guess we should like think about doing something real, and there wasn't even a second of that, because I would rather die an artist than get a job.
I hear you. I was actually, it kind of, it's funny because it reminds me of a similar situation that I was in. I was working a crap job, and I had finished my last radio gig, and I didn't have this job yet. And I was basically like, this isn't working. This sucks. I have to go get a real job.
Yeah.
And then like, I went in for an interview at like a call center or something horrible like that. And before I even like left the door, I had an email from somebody here like, hey, there's a position open, do you want to come work at a rock and roll show?
I'm like, yes.
Later.
Let's do it.
that's a good start.
It's perfect. I love it how things work out. You guys said you worked with James Iha before. Tell me a little bit about, you know, how you guys connected with him and working with him, and what you learned.
Obviously, James Iha, you know, being on the Smashing Pumpkins, has had a lot of influences in regards to what we've done as a band. And always sitting on the back burner of, those were the bands we grew up on, and, you know, Oasis, Smashing Pumpkins, a bunch of late 80s, early 90s bands. And so seeing someone like that take interest in wanting to do a record with us, I think the head of the label sent them Get Higher, because that was what we got signed off of. And he was like, yeah, I would love to meet with the guys. And we did some pre-production with him and recorded the record in 2 to 2.5 weeks, maybe tops. And
he's a quiet guy. He really is. He's very strange, but I love him.
He kind of he allowed us to be what we are live in the studio, because when we're in the studio, because us having the training of knowing what to do with the piano and having the classical training of knowing what a horn should sound like or a string should sound like, he kind of took that away from us, and he said, "You're not doing this on your first album, guys. Like, you could do it on one or two songs, but for us, we will just throw it on everything." And he's like, no, one take for the viola player coming in, just that's it, and that's the take. And he kind of stuck to the roots of what we've always enjoyed, but it's good to have a producer saying, it sounds fine, go to the next part. You know, not trying to perfect everything. And I feel with a rock band, you can't perfect it. There's too much glitz and glam in the pop world right now, and you need something that's...
You need raw and dirty.
Yeah. But not too raw that it sounds like you're recording in a garage.
Well, you know, that's where the talent comes
from.
I mean, you guys, you played an acoustic set for us before. You gave us three songs. And honestly, no lie, people, one take each song. And it was great.
Thanks.
And, you know, it's clearly because you guys are well-practiced and you know your music and you play it well.
Thank you.
So that's why you have that skill and you have that talent. You can do those kind of things. Whereas some people who maybe need a little more help, they need a little extra production. And
absolutely,
it shows.
Well, that's what we've always been very strong suited for. I feel rock bands have brought MacBooks on stage too much now, and it doesn't make much sense. And you don't need to go up there with a lighting package if you're starting out as a band. Go up there and scare the shit out of everyone. So that's all what it's meant for.
You mentioned Get Higher. That is the single that we're playing right now. Tell me a little bit about what went into writing that song and creating it.
That song, we actually wrote that a long time ago. And then we kind of brought up the idea again because we were living in L.A. at the time and we were having a little too much fun. It's just a very rebellious song. It's just pretty much just saying, like you can't tell me what to do. And that's like the most like young thing to do. Is write a rebellious song like that, but we wrote the song in New Jersey.
Well,
we were trapped in pretty much a studio in New Jersey.
We finished in New Jersey.
Yeah.
We worked with David Bendith and a producer that just is insane but gets the best out of you.
Yeah.
And he just said, "You're staying in the studio. You're not allowed to leave," and locks all the doors. And like he would come to the studio for an hour and he'd be like, "Where's my hit? Where's my hit?"
I'm
like,
slept behind my drum kit.
You know, but that honestly was, he kind of knew how to shake us up in that sense and just get the best out of us. We play him. He's like, "Nope, not good. Do something else." And we're like, "Okay, what do you want, David?" And he's like, "That's it."
Speaking of scaring the shit out of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Locked you guys in.
Oh, it was just mind games all the time with him, yeah. But it was great.
Because he's actually my godfather. He's actually at my birth.
Yeah. So
he didn't let us forget that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he holds that over you constantly.
Oh, all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the other songs you guys played for us today is Too Many People. Tell me a little bit about what went into creating that song.
We wrote that actually the first house in LA that we ever were evicted from. We were paying rent, and
I think it's important for a song to stand and represent your time and your generation. And as adolescents writing that song, we wanted to inspire for revolution and communal culture, because we feel like, you know, we could be standing at a time of beauty and revolution if we just look up from our screens long enough, you know.
When you guys are playing live shows and you see people there with their phone up, you know, videoing you as you play, like, what's going through your mind? Because there's been
cool
a lot of reactions.
It's the best promo.
Who watches that back? I don't know anyone that watches that. It's like when you film fireworks on your phone. You're not going to watch that. Just delete it. Just don't waste your time. Enjoy it.
My personal favorite thing is I just love seeing just that one person in the crowd that's texting during when I'm on.
Remington,
that is so unacceptable
never,
for
never
me.
Never text when Remington's on stage.
I will stop the show, and I will just point you out until you like turn bright red, and then I will like take your cell phone away from you. God, that's the one thing I just do not like about shows. I understand like capturing a moment, but like if you're like checking Instagram, I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna
he does it a lot to like guys that are standing very like stone cold, just looking at us like we have 18
they could
heads
be,
or something.
They could be enjoying it. I don't know, but
no,
like,
he'll call them out and just be like, "Are you unhappy?" And then they're just like, "No, it's fine." And then mostly they end up just hugging each other.
Yeah, I was like, "Come here."
If you embarrass someone enough, they're like, "Oh no."
Then I see them by the end of the show, like so forcefully moving. They're like, "Is this good enough for you?" I'm like, "Yes, it is. You did a great job."
You actually played a new song for us as well, Death Dance. Tell me about that one, because people haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, Kim Fowley. When we met Kim Fowley, it was through Rodney Bingenheimer, and he just kind of gave him the phone, and we were his last unfinished project in the sense of he just kind of taught us the way of how you have to be in this world if you want to survive. And you know, we had him in a very vulnerable state, and he was just sharing with us how you just have to go out there and have everyone hate you. And he called it the death dance. And he says, if you do not, you know, translate to an audience that hates you, then you're not going to be anything, and stop playing it safe. And that's kind of what the whole idea that we wrote it about.
The whole thing for me is just kind of like just being 100% honest in a song and not holding anything back, because I think that's the most important, because I feel like a lot of people don't say exactly what's on their mind anymore, and it's really upsetting, because that's the whole point of music, you know. And so I just kind of told exactly everything that I'm kind of going through and everything that, like, what's in my head and what's going on with me, and I just put it into a song, and, like, people like it, great. If they don't, it's me, you know.
So that song is going to be on the next album, yes?
Side B, yeah, we hope. We'll see.
Boom Boom Room Side A came out last year.
Yep.
And so Side B is coming.
Probably. We're aiming for May 5th, but as things go on.
We're going to say May 5th.
We're going to say May
5th. We're saying May 5th.
We're going to stick to it. Everyone on our team and label and stuff, they're like, you don't even have a recorder. I'm like, yeah, but it's rote. It'll take us 2 weeks to record a record. You know, we don't need to, like, go and perfect guitar parts because it's going to sound the way it sounds, you know.
Yeah. So it doesn't take us very long.
And we record everything pretty much rhythm guitar, bass, and drums are usually tracked all at the same time. So when you're eliminating more than 60% of everything out in one take, it's kind of pretty easy to do. So
do you guys do any kind of, like, pre-production when you go into record? Or are you
our pre-production, like, is touring. Live. We do live pre-production.
Yeah, we play songs from the new record, like, live, and then we see how it goes over. If we're like, oh, this song's going to work, and it didn't really react that well, and the song that we thought would do that well is doing well. Like, that's the whole point, is play it live,
you
see
need
how
to
people
use
feel
your,
about it.
You need to use your audience as your best critics, because you can be a good critic, but if you don't know until you play it for someone, and playing it for a select group of 20 people that are on your team that you respect isn't always the greatest way. You know, when you're playing to a room of 500 to 1,000 kids, they're going to tell you exactly what they think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you know.
You have any moments where things just did not go over well and you're getting the WTF look?
Not recently, which has
not
been
recently.
Which has been good.
There was one high school show that Sebastian went to the crowd, and all the kids stole his jewelry. And so he gets up on stage, he starts yelling at these kids, like, give me my jewelry back. And then you can't say that to a group of 3,000 kids, because it will not go over well. Sadly, we still had to finish a show, and it was just so awkward, because you could tell they were just like, we hate you guys so much. Right?
I think the only thing that went in favor with us doing something like that, there's some girl in an audience just heckling us. She was like, when is this band coming on? We're like, you just got to wait. It's fine. Yeah, it was funny. She was in her late 30s and everyone else is like in their 20s, and like 15 years old girls that are all standing in the front screaming their heads off.
And then this crazy woman decides to start, like, hitting our beautiful young fans that were just enjoying themselves. And he jumps down in the crowd and she, like, latched onto him. And so, like, we stopped the show. Like, all of us just, like, stopped. And then we, like, jumped up and I poured a bottle of water on her.
And threw it at her.
It made her feel really dumb really quick.
It was like a dog. You're just like, stop. You're not allowed to do that
anymore. Yeah.
Just roll up a newspaper.
Exactly. Quit it. Stop.
We have a newspaper. We should do that.
Yeah, we put out our own newspaper.
Yeah.
See, that's cool. I mean, you guys have a lot of content besides music about your band. You know, you have a YouTube channel, and you have all these films of, like, just you guys, you know, going through your day and going places and doing stuff. Like, where do you find the time to do all this?
It's hard.
It's tough.
It's hard editing. I have to edit everything myself. And so you just learn. You just learn to wear all these hats. Emerson writes the newspaper, and we, you know, do little things that are interesting for the audience, of the fans, because our fan base is more of a family to us now that we've grown, and we're seeing that they respect us, and people find, you know, there's a lot of disrespectful fans for some reason, but in our case, everyone kind of just gets along and enjoys a concert and enjoys what we're doing and kind of backs anything we do.
Like, a lot of the shows we play, there's fans that come up and they're like, I've met my best friend because of this band, or I've met my boyfriend because of this band, or, you know, it's really cool, because it's like, I don't think there's much of a, I don't know, I haven't really seen, like, anything like that recently, where it's like everyone's kind to each other, and it's like, be nice, and, like, you know, treat people how you would like to be treated, you know.
I think you had also said that, Emerson, you do a lot of the artwork for the band as well.
Yeah.
Who are the artists that you kind of look to inspire you?
MC Escher and his paradoxical state. There was like three Italian and Roman painters that were commissioned to draw, like, the Roman Empire, and one of them, Giovanni Baptiste, Piranesi went insane, and he started drawing just like mental estates and staircases and stuff. And so just art like that inspires me. Renaissance.
One of my favorite artists is Salvador Dali.
Yeah.
And incredible. I don't know if you guys have ever been down to like the Tampa Bay area of Florida, but there is a Salvador Dali museum down there. I love that place. I only went in there once, but it was just completely mind-blowing. If you ever get a chance to go in
there. We're playing Tampa on this tour, so.
Recommend it.
Yeah, it's artists like Dali and Picasso. They produced over like 2,000, 3,000 works, and I think that's incredible to be prolific. Yeah, I like that word.
I'm sure you guys will be just as prolific.
Thank you.
2,000 songs.
2,000
yeah,
songs.
That's the third album.
Right.
Hopefully we'll get one hit.
Yeah, we're looking for the whole idea, though, is to elaborate more on how, you know, the way we dress and the way we sound. Now it's to capture that in the film essence. And obviously, film costs more money than anything else. And we're getting to that point that we finally are going to just, there's going to be something big for this band that we're going to put together that only a few have adapted at in the rock and roll world, and I think it's taking it to the next light and not making it a music video sense. Making a music film is huge, and you kind of have to follow what the greats did and follow suit, because no one's done it in the past 10 years, you know.
I do want to do a quick aside here, because I was watching the New York film, the two that you guys put together, and at the beginning, you know, you guys are headed to the airport, and like, you're not dressed for the airport, you're dressed like you guys dress.
This is us.
Full
100%.
Like, you know, all the time. And I'm just thinking that, how did you get through security?
We don't. They're like, you need to take off that. And we're like, no, not gonna happen. Just search me. And they're like, okay.
Take out your little wand. Just do your thing.
Or there's two types of security people. There's either the ones that are just not happy with us, or there's the ones that are just like, you know, come through, just take a photo with me at least. Yeah.
So you guys are on the road now, clearly. How's it going so far?
It's going well. We've
halfway through.
More than halfway through.
Mentally, I'm not sure exactly where I am, but we're having fun.
We're in New York, and the only thing that got the excitement booster is one of our friends runs the Electric Room here, and he's throwing us a huge after party from 12 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be the most rock and roll thing you potentially can possibly do.
See, it's fun, like, you know, partying and stuff, but I'm like, I just know I would be so tired for the next show. I'm just like,
it's gonna be hungover. We have a day off tomorrow, which is the most dangerous thing for our band. So
day offs are like, no,
if we didn't have a day off, we would still do it, but now the day off is kind of we have 8 more days left on this tour, and then we're heading from Florida to Wisconsin for a festival, and then now we're headlining for the first time ever in England. And it is the coolest thing to us, because our fans didn't even know we had an audience there. We've never been over there. We've never played a show. And we sold out the place in less than 72 hours. So it took us a lot longer in the States to do. Overseas, they understand truly what rock and roll is. And you don't have to – there's no learning curve. So,
but, like, that's what we've done with the States, is because, you know, we've never had any radio, nothing like that. We just played the same city 5 different times in a year, and just it was just completely natural, and just people coming back. So it took a lot longer, and now that I think we have a little more press about us, it's happening a little bit easier. We don't have to like go play a kid's house and then a bar and then like a small club to move up, you know.
But it's that organic growth that you guys had.
Well, that was some of the best times.
We slept in our mom's SUV.
We took our mom's SUV for the first, I think, 4 tours.
And it was 6 grown men in an SUV and driving. I've drove over 160,000 miles in 2 years. And
you never think like you'd be super ecstatic to be getting the trunk in an SUV to sleeping. Or like, I get the trunk tonight. You're like, yes. I never thought I'd be saying that, but It took
a lot of alcohol and a lot of muscle relaxers.
Yeah, it took a lot of alcohol to fall asleep.
I can only imagine. It's, you know, I road trip now and again, and it's hard enough falling asleep in like, you know, a seat in like a sedan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like having to lay on the floor of an SUV.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's good though.
We're taller too, so it's like there's like some days I'm like, I just wish I was like 5'8". my God.
We're all 6'1", so it's the wingspan of a car is not that big. But now we're at the point that we've figured out. We got this covered by the three of us, and we kind of have this working vehicle in the sense of we just know how to get from city to city and make it happen, and we don't need anyone's, you know, deep pockets to make it happen for us. Our fans are coming to do VIP acoustic shows. We play kids' houses on days off, and it's, you know, keeping something that a lot of bands are scared to do or don't understand that you have to be personable, and you have to be we're all the same. We just play music, and it's good music, so...
Well, I can definitely tell from the reactions of your fans that I see online that everyone is really in love with you guys.
Yeah.
So you're clearly doing it right.
Thank you.
The numbers are showing it. The music is fantastic. And I'm sure you guys are going to be killing it for years to come. So
that is the goal.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much for coming by, man.
Thanks for having us.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.